Welcome to another edition of Always Right with Rochelle, the Right Now Coach. Today I'm delighted to be talking with Sheldon Rush. He's the author of two critically acclaimed suspense novels, For Edgar and The Boy with the Perfect Hands. And I'm delighted to tell you that he has a new book coming out this coming April of 08 called Separated at Death. By day, he's an advertising copywriter and a creative director. Welcome, Sheldon.
Thank you. Great to be with you.
Oh, I'm excited to talk to you. I lost two whole days reading your book, and my family wondered what happened to me. And I said, well, I can't put it down until I find out what happens. So.
Well, that's great. That is the goal, is to keep the pages turning.
Oh.
So I'm glad you had that experience and that you enjoyed it.
They're great books. So,
thank you.
So, well, why don't you just start out telling us a little bit about the series and your protagonist so that people who are listening who may not know you or your books can get a sense of who you are and what you write.
Well, I like to describe it as psychological thrillers. That's the genre that I'm in. Under the big tent of mysteries. And I've, like you say, I've written two in the series with a protagonist named Elizabeth Taylor Hewitt. She's a special agent with the Illinois State Police. And an interesting character who I've really come to enjoy working with. And she's almost become, after all this time, almost like a real entity to me. In fact, I tell my wife I spend more time with Elizabeth than I do with her, which doesn't sit well all the time, but it's kind of true. And I just really enjoyed the process of creating a character and working on a series. It creates its own challenges, you know, to keep a series going. But so far, it's been well received. People seem to really like the Elizabeth Hewitt character, and so I plan to continue to work with her until they tell me to stop.
That's great. So tell me, why a female character, a protagonist?
Good question, and that's one that I get at every reading I go to, and whenever I talk to any groups of writers or readers. And the reason for that, I think, is that I wrote one book prior to publications called The Songbirds, in which I had a male protagonist named Walt Matthews. The book didn't sell, came very close at a couple of publishing houses, did get me a New York agent, which was a very important step. But feedback I was getting it was that we've seen so many male detectives, and this was set in Los Angeles. And so, you know, after I went through that experience, I started to rethink and reload a little bit, and I thought, well, let's just try it. You know, let's see if we can go anywhere with a female character. I had to use some different muscles in my brain to kind of reset and move in that direction. But so far, it seems to have worked well. And I guess, you know, I wouldn't say so much as it's she's kind of become an alter ego for me on the feminine side, because I'm not sure what my male friends would think about that, but I think it's been good for me, and you know, I seem to have kind of created in Hewitt, I've created her sort of out of a composite of women I've known, including my wife probably, and people always ask that, you know, how did you come up with her?
Yeah.
And a lot of times, to me, it's a mystical process, too. You know, I can't really come up with concrete answers all the time for why exactly she turned out the way she did. But it's like anything else. I think as you start to create a character, the characters evolve. Once you get them into situations and put them into places with other characters, they start to take on a life of their own. Really grow into interesting characters.
So do you have any tips or techniques that you use to create Elizabeth and your other characters that you might pass on?
Well, I think it all sort of begins with observation and with listening to people around you. Now, that's not to say that you need to detach yourself from conversations that you're having and start taking mental notes, but I think it really helps to observe the way people interact, the way people behave, even not necessarily one-on-one, but, you know, you may observe a situation. You may be standing in line at a coffee shop. You may overhear a conversation. You can listen. There's nothing wrong with that. It's not against the law to listen in. You may annoy people if they realize you're doing that sometimes out in public. But I think it begins with observation, listening to the way people really speak in terms of creating effective dialogue. And it's amazing how, you know, when you write, you realize that all your life experiences have been stored, at least somewhere. Some are close and more accessible in the mind, but everything is there. And as you get deeper and deeper into, again, I call it the mystical process of writing, it's amazing what you tap into. And I think a lot of these characters are often based on people that you've met, not necessarily a single individual, but sometimes composites, and I think that's how you build interesting characters. At least that's how it's worked for me.
Well, that's great. That's very helpful. Well, you know, I want to back up a little bit because I'm really curious. I've read your bio, and I know that you have this day job and that you did teach yoga, and you're married and you have kids, and I'm wondering kind of when you decided this wasn't enough, that you needed to also write books, and then once that urge came up, what did you do to follow it? How did you make the time to write a book and get an agent and all that stuff?
Well, I actually started dabbling in fiction probably when I was in high school.
Wow.
And a little bit through college, and then, you know, real life sometimes intervenes in the pursuits of your dreams. So, you know, I got into the advertising business, and, you know, that's been good to me in terms of being able to provide for my family. But, you know, that's only one aspect of what makes us happy as human beings. And always in the back of my mind, I knew that, or there was it was almost like a voice that kept reminding me, you know, you were gonna write books someday. You were gonna be a novelist, weren't you? And you know, that just kind of kept hanging around and hanging around. And I got into my late 30s, and the voice got a little louder. And it was as if you almost get to the point where, well, you know, if you're not gonna start soon, then you're probably not ever going to start.
Mm.
So one day I just sort of sat down, started, you know, putting a few notes together, throwing some ideas down on paper, and just somehow summoned the courage to overcome all those years of not being able to start and pick up the pen and begin to write fiction. You know, if you go through all the excuses. I have, like you just said, I have a day job, wife, kids, busy, and this and that. And you know what, though? You can always find the time. And once I did that, I was able to find time in the morning to do a little writing. I would write during my lunch break at work. And then on the weekends, I would, you know, you still have to balance things out when you have family, when you have relationships. And but you can find the time.
Wow.
I find that's just not a good enough excuse not to write. If you really desire to, you can make the time. So I'm very resourceful, and I really think that, you know, I've taken sabbaticals from my job where I've had all day to write, and I'm not sure that I am necessarily more productive having all day as much as on a weekend when I have 2 or 3 hours, and when I sit down in those two or three hours, that is my writing time.
Wow.
And so I am very focused. Can't really afford to stare out the window too much.
Wow.
I really want to get as much done in that time frame as I can.
Yeah, I was just reading another writer saying that there's no such thing as writer's block in her life because she's got to write when the kids are at school, so she writes, and when they come home, she doesn't.
I think that makes a lot of sense. I think sometimes you can almost have too much time.
Yeah.
I know that probably sounds like a luxury to other writers out there who are trying to desperately find a couple hours each day to write. But if you can find those hours, cherish those hours and take full advantage. That's your time. So, you know, make really good use of that time.
Well, I heard that you wrote at least part of the first book at Starbucks. Is that true? And can you tell us what that process was like?
Well, it all goes back to kind of a funny incident when I was working on my first novel. My computer, my laptop screen broke.
Mm-hmm.
Probably one of my kids was involved in that. And I thought to myself, since I'd written on laptops, I'll my ad career and all that, that I was ruined. I was dead in the water. What could I possibly do? So then I had an epiphany that I could, you know, I could buy legal pads and a pen, and I could I could do that. That I could write again. And so that began a really interesting process because I write longhand.
Oh, you do? Your book?
Yes, I write longhand. And I find that how this pertains to Starbucks is that I find it's, I know you can take your portable laptop in there and all that thing, kind of thing, but when you write that way, freehand, with your legal pads, you can pretty much go sit anywhere. You don't have to plug the legal pad into the wall or worry about a battery running out. Sometimes my battery runs out, but so that's where I would kind of hang out. There's a Starbucks in my neighborhood, and I like to drink a little coffee when I'm writing. I'm trying to cut back, but I don't know. There's something about the ambiance and the buzz of people. I know some people need quiet. I don't like too much quiet. I almost feed off the energy of people being around and hearing dishes clanking and all that kind of stuff in the background. And so I would go sitting there every morning with my legal pad and my pen and write away. And I still do it. I find that I'm doing a little more of the work at home now. But I've always enjoyed writing in coffee shops, and that's not unusual. I think sometimes it's just good to get out of the house and it can stimulate the mind and kind of keep you going.
So when you work like that with a legal pad, then is putting it into the computer part of your revision process?
That's actually my first pass at an edit. What I'll do is write up to the equivalent of 50 double spaced pages in the legal pad. I mean, I've got the math all kind of figured out.
Wow.
How it converts. And I'll do about 50 pages at a time, at which point I will enter that all into the laptop, and that's my first edit. And then I'll print it out, of course, and then I'll do a paper edit to that. I'll put those revisions in, and then I'll start again with the legal pads and the pen. And that's how I build these books. I know people out there, my agent, for instance, who thinks I'm nuts, she's understanding there's a method to the madness now, but she just couldn't believe that you know, I was writing longhand. But
wow.
I just, something about it, with the computer, with the laptop, it's almost like, you know, there's that anticipation, the screen's waiting for me, you know. There's a lovely silence in writing freehand, and I believe it was John Updike who said that he writes freehand because it allows him to hear the words as he's thinking of them,
wow,
as opposed to the clicking and clacking of the keyboard or even in the old days the typewriter. So, which I always thought was kind of interesting, and I could certainly understand that it's a little bit quieter kind of thing and the most portable way. You go to a park, go sit down on a bench or do whatever, wherever you are, you know, it's really easy.
And a lot lighter than a laptop.
Well, it definitely is. Definitely is. It's a lot lower maintenance.
Wow. So I'm curious about this process and the thing that I always think about when I read a suspense book like yours, a psychological thriller, is, now, is this a guy who outlines, or is this a guy who just writes as it comes? So tell me about how you learn to plot and how you do it.
I have, when I start out, usually the idea for a book, like for Edgar, which, you know, is a series of crimes are committed based on the short stories of Edgar Allan Poe, the idea came to me, like all ideas, I think, in an epiphany, in a flash, you know.
Hmm.
Then I'll spend some weeks thinking about it, making some notes, just sort of living with the idea, allowing it to take whatever shape or form it's going to take. And then after that period of several weeks, I'll have a general idea of where the book is going to go. I'll have the major points of the plot figured out for the most part. But then I don't do a lot of detailed outlining, or I don't really work with note cards. I have in the past, but I kind of move past that a little bit, and I just like to begin with a situation, throw my character or characters into it, and then just sort of see what happens
Wow.
once they start to interact. All the while knowing that I have to build toward a plot point or a resolution that's coming out of the setup. And in the meantime, I really like to allow for spontaneity, for things that would surprise me. Because I think if you are a little too diligent in your outlining, you can, especially in thrillers or mysteries, you can begin to telegraph your plot. And I find that if I'm surprised by a twist, then I'm almost sure that the reader's going to be surprised.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how I work.
Wow. It's fascinating. How did you learn how to do this? How did you learn kind of this idea of plot points and where the turning points have to happen and
Well,
the complications?
sure. I actually, when I was in my mid to late 20s, dabbled a little bit in screenwriting. Was able to sell a couple of scripts that, like 99% of movie scripts that are optioned, that went unproduced. But I really learned because, oh my God, when you get into that screenwriting, the amount of rewriting is incredible. I don't know if it's a kind of a pathological thing with producers out there that they have to rewrite every script 15 times before they're satisfied or what it is.
Wow.
But through that process, I really kind of learned first act, second act, third act, how to build, every 10 pages or so of screen t or 10 minutes or so of screen time, you needed even in that unit a beginning, a middle, and an end. And so that has definitely carried over to what I do with fiction. In fact, a lot of people have told me that my books really feel as if they're almost written for the screen or written to be made into a movie, because I tend to write in short chapters. In film you would write 2 or 3 minute scenes or about the
Yeah.
max, and I tend to write short, sometimes chapters only 2 pages, rarely more than 7 or 8 pages in length. So that's kind of how I learned to build plot and build character and that sort of thing. And then, just through the process of writing, having written an entire novel that went unsold, and then now writing two that have been published and a third that's about to be published, and all the rewrites that you need to do or revisions and things like that. I think you really just learn the craft. And then you have to be aware too, when you're reading the works of other people, not only in the genre you're working in, but anything really
Yeah.
that you like that's out there, you can learn and see how people, why in one book pacing seems to be terrific, and in another book you're kind of skipping ahead to see what might happen because, you're getting a little bored. And
Yeah.
I think you can take lessons just from your own study, from your own reading too.
That's good. That's helpful. Can you give us any tips of your favorite writers or who you like to learn from?
Well, in my genre, I like Thomas Harris, and I like Dennis Lehane a lot. I'd say those are my two favorite in the genre that I work in.
That's
But
good.
you'd be surprised that, I'm very eclectic in the things that I read. I like to read some of the masters, like Fitzgerald and F. Scott Fitzgerald or Hemingway. I just read The Godfather, believe it or not, Mario Puzo's The Godfather, for the first time. I'd seen all the movies over and over and over. I thought I'd read the book, and I thought it was just wonderful. It
Wow.
was just terrific, the plotting and the characters and the depth and the imagery was just terrific. So I'll read almost anything, fiction, nonfiction, and I try to make a point of learning something from every book that I read.
So can you talk a little bit about what it's like to keep the series going? You've got three books under your belt. I'm guessing there'll be a fourth one sometime.
Right now I'm dabbling with the idea of maybe taking a break from the series and writing a standalone, but I haven't made that decision. I'm taking a little bit of a break because I've written three novels in 5 years, and I need a little bit of time to recharge my batteries. But while I'm doing that, I'm kind of thinking ahead and plotting out what I may do next. Keeping a series going is a little bit tricky in that you want new characters to come into the dynamic with your protagonist. I'll just refer to her refer to Elizabeth as her. You want her to keep discovering new things, also being aware that, you know, time is passing in her life and she's in her late 30s. She's not married. She's interested in marriage. She's in the back of her mind thinking about having kids. So you have to kind of, you know, as time passes, a year passes between your books, the only year has passed in that person's life, and how have they changed, and what new things have come in, what new issues have come into their life, you know, from when they're 35 years old to when they're 40 or beyond. The other thing that I found interesting, my editor reminds me of this all the time, is that you cannot expect that all your readers are going to start with book one and then, you know, read chronologically through book two, three, four, five, whatever. Some might start with book three.
Yep.
And that, to me, is the biggest trick of all, because you cannot presume that people are going to know anything about your protagonist. So each time, each new book, you have to put in enough background, backstory about your character, backstory about previous books, references and things like that, so that it all makes sense, without running the risk of boring people who are reading you as a series with things that you've already said. So there's a really fine line there.
And you don't want to give away plots of previous novels, because you don't want to ruin.
Right. You can make a passing reference to something, but you certainly can't give it away too. So it's tricky. It's a lot more challenging than I would have imagined. But you know, I'm happy to have the opportunity to keep the series going and enjoying it.
What's it like to keep coming up with? I mean, both of the novels I've read have some pretty horrific things happening, and they're out there. So what's it like to continue coming up with kind of horrific ideas? Do you have to scan the newspapers, or where do you find?
Well, I'll tell you, if you spend any amount of time watching CNN or Fox News at night, out there in the real world, there are some pretty crazy things happening all the time. I don't really know, and it's funny, you know, I've always kind of been drawn to, for instance, when I was in my teens, I remember the first time that I was exposed to Edgar Allan Poe. I believe it was The Telltale Heart. Like a lot of kids, I was just really interested in that. I was drawn to that. I just thought that's a very interesting, surreal kind of a world. And I think we all have a side of us that, you know, we have a light side and we have a dark side. And I think that's true of anybody. I think you have to be a little bit careful when you're dealing with that dark side of humanity, just to balance it out somehow. That's why I practice yoga and teach yoga. That's my other side. When people who know me from that world, that part of my world, are just surprised when they read my books, and I tell them that I blame that on my evil twin Steve, who is actually the one who writes the novels. And sometimes they believe that, sometimes they don't. But it can be a really draining process when you're dealing with the dark side. That's why I find Elizabeth Hewitt to be, she's the light in these books.
Yeah.
She's really the moral core, because at some point when you're dealing with confrontation of good and evil, and it's not always that simple, white hats and black hats, they're all different shades of gray in there. But I think it's important to have a strong moral core where there is a recognition of what is okay and what clearly is not. And to me, that moral compass is my protagonist.
That's great. That I've never heard that before, but that's an interesting point, and I do see that in Elizabeth. She's got this real strength about her that stands at the center of the books and makes the reader feel like, well, it's not all going to be horrible.
No. At least there's some hope in this world embodied in Elizabeth.
Yeah. So we're just about out of time. Okay. I'm wondering if you have a final tip for our listeners, most of whom are writers.
Well, I would say, and this is something that that I read from Stephen King, is that his definition of a writer is someone who has written today.
Mm.
And I've always found that to be so great. So I would say, find the time. If you haven't written today, find some time later in the day to write. Find an hour tomorrow. Find that time. Because that is how you really begin to understand the craft, begin to understand how the craft is going to work for you, how this mystical process is going to unfold for you. So I think the most important thing you can do is to keep showing up. And again, I don't want to just quote other people, but I think it was Woody Allen who said that 75% of success in life is just showing up.
Wow.
And I've always thought that was a great one too, because you have to keep showing up. You have to show up at the laptop or show up at the desk or at the coffee shop or whatever. You just have to be kind of relentless with that. And there are days I don't want to drag myself into you know, the coffee shop or the writing situation. And yet when I get there and I start, I'm so glad that I did, because all of a sudden the ideas start to come. Even when you think, oh, my God, I just don't have anything in my head today, there's always something there, as long as you sit down and you really sit down and trust the process and sit down and begin to do your magic.
Sheldon, thank you. This has been wonderful.
I've really enjoyed it. Thank you very much, and best wishes to all your writers out there, and keep writing.
Well, and we hope you'll keep showing up at that legal pad.
I sure will.
So we can keep reading about Elizabeth.
I have a whole stack of them.
That's great. This has been another edition of Always Right with Rochelle, the Right Now Coach. You can find a link to Sheldon's website and his books at my website, rightnowcoach.com. Thanks for tuning in, and remember to always write.